Well, I'm recording, you guys.
All right. So I think the next work actually we do the Pledge of Allegiance. It's not on the agenda, but since I recall, we stand. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Kathy, do you want to do roll call?
Yes. Bill Cover.
Here.
Jeff Jones.
Yes, here. I'm sorry.
Bruce Utter.
Here.
Andy Rich. Absent. Sharon Tobias.
Here.
Dan Crosby.
Here.
John Dashner.
Do we have any members of the public?
No.
Just checking. So we do, the next is the public comment. I think we're going to move on unless somebody has something to say.
You got to have a public guest.
Right. Well, I think you guys can speak as a public, but that would be the time. So the consent calendar. Normally what we do is these are available for review in your packet. So unless somebody has questions about the minutes, the financials, or the water production, we just approve and move on. So does anyone have any questions?
Yes, Sharon, I have a lot of questions and comments about the financials. So I want to take that off the consent calendar.
That's fine. Who is speaking?
This is Dan Crosby.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so the financials will move off the consent calendar. Anything else? No. So, and Andrew, do we pass everything else or do the financials and then approve everything? I don't recall.
So the typical practice is to go ahead and move forward with the consent calendar for the items that have not been pulled. And then you can put the financials onto the agenda in any order in which you wish. You can take them up next or you can take them up later in the agenda at the chair's discretion.
So why don't we approve the consent calendar with the exception of the June financials and we'll move back to the agenda. I need a motion to do that.
Motion to approve the consent calendar with the exception of June financials.
Thank you. So we move on to the financials. What should do is.
Yeah, it depends what it is.
Yeah.
So on page 5,
there we go. Oh, wait a sec. There we go.
Two quick questions. So down there about the bottom of that page, it says prepaid expenses. What would those be? Stop.
Did I pass it? Sorry.
Go back up a little, Kathy.
Sorry.
Right there, prepaid expenses. Water fees.
I see the bottom one. Yeah, with $12,195.
Yeah, the $12,195. That I haven't recalled seeing a prepaid expense like that on there before.
I believe that's going to be people who have paid ahead on their accounts. Am I right or wrong, Kathy, on that?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Because some people pay more for their bill. Just as recently, we went to the every other monthly statements. So some people still pay very large sums, try to pay the whole
amount. Okay. So these are people that pay their bill ahead of time.
Yes. And
some of it's collected through escrow. We've had quite a few homes turn over recently.
Okay.
So Dan, are you thinking you want that itemized or
No, I just was trying to figure out what a prepaid expense was, but that explains.
No, it was a good question. I liked it. Yeah.
So down in the next section at the bottom, there's suspense for $17,232. Up a little.
Sorry. Oh, I'm too far.
Which item are you looking at, Dan?
Keep going down a little bit. All right, stop right there. Fixed assets at the bottom, there's suspense for $17,232.
Kathy, can you explain what the suspense is in there?
I'm wondering if that was part of
under fixed assets. So
I see it. Prepaid.
Lee is the guru.
Can we go back to prepaid expenses? I just found Lee's note on that. The $12,195.
Sure.
Okay, so it says prepaid expenses under accounts receivable is the July Blue Shield Health Insurance premium, which has an error of $2,420 due to our new employees becoming eligible for insurance, but Blue Shield overcharged us, and that will be reversed and reflected in the July financial, she said.
Okay.
Did you say anything about the suspense and the fixed asset?
I am looking. She didn't. So I'll have to ask her.
Okay.
I have a note.
She'll be back Tuesday.
She'll be here Monday afternoon, I think. For sure, Tuesday.
All right. So maybe we can get a response.
Yes.
Later. That's a great question, Dan.
Okay. So on the next page, it's just a comment on page 6.
Okay.
Every time I get a look at these. So right there, the budget, if you could show that as the 2021 budget, go up. It's the header that says budget.
Okay.
Just if you could say
right
2021
here.
Budget.
Okay.
That's how you show it on other sheets.
Okay.
So.
Got it.
9. So I'm just trying to understand in the first section, income and detail summary, there's a co-bank dividend for $54,810. And that looks like it's not even been budgeted in our account. Did we not expect to get
$54,000? I think
Yeah, that was refunded to us at the close of escrow, and I think we just overlooked that dividend would come to us. So, but it's a one-time deal.
Oh, so we just didn't think we'd be getting that.
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is good news. Yep. It's just
yeah.
We should have known.
So I just got one point of order, if I can interrupt for a second, is that if you're not speaking, could you put on mute, because there's a lot of I hear a lot of background noise, people moving papers and stuff, so yeah, just a minor thing, but
and then we go down on the bottom of the page 9. I'm very confused. There's a USDA loan repayment. There's a $427,000 line item there. It looks like Oh, yeah. We owe $427,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but that will be repaid next year in January when we make our first loan repayment. Mm-hmm. So the money has been set aside. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah, that's the annual payment amount that we have to make to USDA, which will occur every January.
Okay, but did we make a payment in 2021?
No, it's due 1 year after the close of escrow. Okay. The first payment is due 1 year after.
And we're showing on the 2021 budget, even though we're going to pay it in 2022?
I think at the time we set our budget, we thought that the USDA loan would close sooner. So it ended up getting extended out into January. So that's why it's showing that way.
Okay.
We're collecting it and we'll have it early. We've been collecting it for a couple years, so actually we're 1 year ahead on collecting USDA funds. So because of that, we were able to eliminate the debt reserve that was going to be due, which was a 10% of the annual payment for 10 years. So not to try to confuse you, but we're pretty far ahead in collecting our funds for the first payment.
Okay. So I guess my concern is if I take that $427,000 out here that we're not going to pay this year and redo the total expenses, we're way higher than 39% to date, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but if we went a straight line basis for the expenses, they'd come, what, to about 1.2 or 1.3, which would be pretty much in line with what the budget would be if you took that amount away. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So you're saying if
you took the 427 away from the 1.625, that would be what, 1.2 something or right, whatever. If you doubled the expenses to date through June, you'd be right around that same amount. So in theory, we're kind of pretty much on budget.
Okay. So we're more or less at 50% instead of 39%.
Correct.
Okay. I was just worried that there was something there we were missing. Okay.
I think, Dan, you bring up a good point. So we may want to look at how we report that, so it's more clear to everybody. So, but it's all good. Sounds like.
There's a note at the bottom of page 6 that shows where we're at in income versus budget for the year. 50% of the year complete, we've earned 53% of our income.
Right.
Expenses were
cash basis. So the page 6 is accrual, which is basically what we earned versus what we actually brought in. They're slightly different.
But
what we have in the bank, right?
The next question, where you total expenses, what we show, we're at 39%. That's more like at 50%.
Right.
We burned 50%, and we spent 50%.
I think it'd be a good idea to put an asterisk there and put a footnote explaining it.
That's great.
That's all I have. Yeah.
I have one other comment on the financials that I just thought about. It's actually going to be a question probably Lee will have to answer when she gets back. But on page 5, on the balance sheet, For Edward Jones reserve bond up in the reserve accounts near the top, the amount that it's showing is $802,628. If I looked at May, that amount has decreased by like $962.
Yes.
And so those accounts are collecting interest, you know, and that account should be fairly good interest. So I can't understand why the amount decreased.
Lee explained the amount decreased. That's an Edward Jones one, and its money is in the stock market, and the stock market decreased. So we lost money last month in that account.
Oh, okay.
That's the way she explained it to me.
I think we better look at that because I'm not sure we're a stock brokering company. Is that what's in our, I mean, if we're buying a savings bond or something, but I don't think our charter lets us buy and sell stocks.
And to Bill's point, I'm sorry, which line item is this? I missed which one it was.
The Edward Jones reserve bond.
Okay.
That may be, we have to have that for a bond for savings or something, a rainy day bond. But if it's in the stock market, it's the way that using that word stock market caught my attention. So
yeah,
we should look at it, Andrew. I mean,
I presume that they're talking about investment in equities. And to your point, Bill, and maybe Tom knows this, I have not seen in my time with the water company some sort of investment policy. Because I've always assumed that the water company's investments were held in stable bonds or savings accounts or money market funds or things like that. Tom, do you know, or others on the board, if there's an investment policy that directs the investment of reserve funds like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, there's laws. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Lee has a good definition of what that account is. And how it works. So I think what we should do is have Lee bring forward that information so everyone can see it and it'll be clear to everybody.
That's probably a good idea. And to Bill's point, so if the water company were a public agency, there'd be many restrictions on what sources of funds can be used for what sorts of investments. Because it's a private water company, there are less restrictions. Certainly, if these are funds that have to be held in debt reserve for the USDA fund, there will be restrictions on how they can be invested. But I agree with Tom's point. It's probably a good idea to just understand how those funds are being invested. And to the extent that they're invested in equities, it may be something that the long-range planning committee or the treasurer may want to take a look at and just get a handle on.
But we're... So, Andrew, are we still considered a nonprofit, even though we're a mutual water company or private?
It's a complicated answer, unfortunately.
No, I'm just thinking that if you're a nonprofit, you wouldn't want to invest in something where you make money that's taxable.
The water company is organized as a California corporation. It is not a mutual benefit corporation under California law. It is tax exempt. And there are some very significant restrictions on how funds can be invested. But the bottom line is, I don't think there's a restriction on this, Bill, on how it needs to be invested. It's really a prudent management of water company funds question for the board and for the treasurer to make in conjunction with understanding how those funds are invested. But I haven't seen this issue come up before, so it's something I'm lacking some background on for how the water company invests those funds.
Okay. No, I'm fine. I guess the accounting, when we did the audit, they would have picked it up, right? If it was something outside of the lanes. Yeah. All right.
It wouldn't have been audited yet, right?
Right. So the audit would have picked it up.
Yeah. So have we had this account for a while? Or is this real? No.
That account was open at the close of the USDA loan.
Yeah. So it's only 5 months old. 4 months old. So.
And who decided who picked Edward Jones Reserve? I've never heard of them, but.
Yeah, are there any other questions on the financials?
So I had a question. So Who picked Edward Jones' reserves? I've never heard of them before.
That was so Lee and I were talking about how, since we have a large sum of money that we would have in the bank, I asked Lee to look into other sources that we could potentially collect higher interest rates. So Lee, I'm not sure who all she talked to, but this is where we ended up deciding we had a good chance of collecting higher interest. So I probably got some the background information that she sent me. I'll look for it after the meeting and try and send it out.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any?
I think Andrew, I hate to bother you. could you find out if whether or not if there's a certain amount of money, if it's moved around, the board has to approve it? Because I don't remember approving this. Maybe I've missed it in a meeting, but we should. If it's like, it looks like $802,000 and 500. So is it 1.3 million in Edward Jones? I mean, if Dan hasn't heard of it, and I don't remember the board making that decision, just what was the, is there something you can help us with on how we should make those decisions? Or?
Yeah. And so I'll need to confer with, I was going to say, Tom is probably a better source on this because there was quite a bit of discussion about reserve funds and how to hold them. As part of the USDA loan. So Tom, I'll kick it over to you.
Yeah. If you go back and I can go back into past board meetings, but there were charts in there as we were approaching the end of the USDA contract and different avenues that we could take when we received our reimbursement. So that 1.3 million, that was the reimbursement that we received from at the end of close of the USDA contract for different project costs that we paid for out of our operating budget over the 3 years of the contract. So at the end of, at the close, we were refunded that 1.3 million. And I can show everybody the charts that were presented that indicated to the board how we were going to allocate those, that reimbursement.
That would be great if you could resend those out.
We'll do.
LRPC reports that you did.
Sounds good, Tom.
Yeah, instead of just collecting the measly interest in our local banks that we have all our other funds invested in, we figured we would try to get a little bit higher interest rates. And as I mentioned, Lee investigated different sources, and these are the ones that we decided on. And I'll send out those charts and show everybody that information that was presented.
Is there anything else about the financials? Any other questions? So do we need to, Andrew, do we need to accept the financials or do anything since we pulled them off the calendar or?
Typically these items are approved as part of the consent calendar. I don't know whether any bills are held as a result of not approving the financials at this meeting. That's probably a question for Kathy. Are any bills not paid, or are there any issues as a result of holding this item over to a future meeting?
That would probably be a lead question. I don't think so.
I don't think so either, because no. I think these bills are approved after the fact.
Yes.
With any questions. So yes. Sharon, I don't see an issue at this point with holding them over to the next meeting unless the board wants to approve them now.
So this is Dan. You've answered my questions. I think there'll be some follow-up information, but I find it acceptable to approve them now unless there's somebody else that doesn't want to approve them.
I think if we could approve them now, that would be good. because we don't meet for 2 more minutes.
So. Yeah. So I move that we approve the financials as they're shown.
We need a second. John, second. Okay. We vote? I'm sorry. It's been a long time.
The eyes have it.
I think we vote. So all in favor of approving the financials?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Just I should say nays. All right. So it's passed. Okay. So the next item is the long range strategic planning committee.
Okay. So if we go to, I think it's page 15 is the beginning of it. So the ongoing focus, you'll probably get tired of seeing this chart, but these are the main areas that over the foreseeable future, the long range planning committee will be focusing on. Ongoing analysis of our reserves budget. So those big dollar amounts you saw in some of those accounts on the balance sheet, those are reserve accounts, 1.3 something million. There will be ongoing analysis of and continuing to look at our potential reserve liens against that budget. So and there'll be some information shared in this meeting on that. Ongoing updates of our multi-year cash flow analysis, including how we approve our reserve spending. Assisting Tyler and his staff on the asset management plan annual database updates. What will happen is we'll be reviewing all the asset items within that database on an annual basis to revise or update based on any asset replacements or repairs that have occurred. And we will continue to collect and analyze meter usage data for consideration and development of future rate structures. Now that we have 100% meters, through discussions with the long range planning committee, I'm assuming that there's going to be more emphasis placed on usage in our rate structure. And we'll continue to review and make recommendations for any operating budgets and expenses as we go forward to minimize any rate shareholder rate increases. So those will be topics that we'll be reviewing every board meeting and with every long range planning committee meeting. So the next chart shows the future structure of long range planning committee. And for anyone that doesn't know, a ways back, I indicated that, initially I was going to step down from the chair position of the committee in June, but then, with Dave's announcement of his retirement and Bob's announcement of his retirement, I decided that I should probably hang on and have some continuity going with new people in place in key positions. So as of our June 2021 meeting, our committee is now comprised of myself, Andy Rich, Jeff Jones, Joe Morgan, Bob McGinnis, and John Dashner. And I want to thank Bob and John for volunteering and for all the great support that Sharon, Andy, Jeff, and Joe have provided over the last several years. I don't think Joe's on the call, but I've had a couple conversations with Joe, and I believe at the end of this year, he's planning on stepping down. He's been on this committee since the start, which has been going for the last five years or so, I think. As we know, the long range planning committee can only include a maximum of 3 board members. And the remaining members are drawn. And that's not really a correct statement. It doesn't have to be a Blue Lake Springs shareholder. Since I'm on the committee and the chair, I'm not, because I'm in the condos and I'm on CCWD. So I'm no longer in the HOA for Blue Lake Springs. So it's not necessarily a shareholder that can make up the remainder of the committee. So I mentioned about stepping down. I met with Sharon and Tyler on July 1st, and we went through several items, including, you know, talking about the long range planning committee. And based on those discussions, I mentioned that I would be willing to consider providing on-call support beyond the end of this year to assist a new chairperson as needed. So I've already sent out a request to the Long Range Planning Committee members, and which I would also like to solicit any ideas or recommendations from the remaining board members if you have any ideas for a replacement for me. If you do, feel free to email me, or you know, I can provide anyone my number if you want to talk to me any more about it and what it entails. So over the next week or so, I'll probably be getting together with the Long Range Planning Committee and just seeing if anybody has come up with any ideas, and if any of you have you know, brought anything forward for us to consider. Then I want to talk to Sharon and Tyler about that. Bob McGinnis has already come up with one idea that I'm not going to share yet because I haven't had a chance to run it by the Long Range Planning Committee. But so in the next week or so here, I'll definitely be getting with Sharon and Tyler and discussing what we have so far. Any questions on that one? Okay, the next chart. So part of what we discussed in that July 1st meeting was just trying to get a little bit of an update on some of these potential liens against our reserve budget. So I've got them shown there. Tyler's been working these, and you know, there, I mentioned at the top that most costs are still in works, still TBD. The paving of Lionbaugh Road, which led to our spoil site for the USDA contract, Tyler's still working that. I guess it's progressing kind of slow. They're trying to work with the different parties that would be involved in chipping in to cover that cost. And I think Tyler mentioned that the total estimate was around $57,000. We had mentioned, Dave had mentioned to them before that we would be willing to commit $20,000, but you know, as this discussion has gone on, hopefully that dollar amount will be less. Tyler, as I go through any of these, if you have anything more to add, go ahead and pitch in.
Paving, we're just kind of, we're waiting on Cooper to set up a bank account and then contact the other people who are going to contribute. That's pretty much the only thing we're waiting on paving.
Okay. The next item was an item that we had as a potential liability. Repair of any concrete driveways that were that we had to run a line, a water line, through the front of it near the road. Originally, you know, there were 21 of those, and we estimated $33,000 to cover that. At this point, we don't have anybody that's really come forward and demanded that we repair their driveways. So I think You know, at this point, it looks like that's probably not going to be a cost that we'll incur. We weren't able to complete Boro Court during the USDA contract. So that item originally was estimated at around $38,000 based on what Tyler is hearing from. He has that item along with others out for bid with Mazingo. And they've mentioned to him that they're estimating increases of around 15 to 20% from what our estimates were back then. Plus they're having trouble getting materials. So they're expecting delays of 3 to 4 months in getting materials. Anything more you want to add on that one, Tyler?
No, you got that perfect.
Okay. Besides Boro Court, there are 23 other tasks. Tyler has the tasks in a couple charts at the very end of our package today. So originally during the USDA project, or once we were approaching the end of the project, there were 12 tasks that we had identified with an estimate of about 45,000. Now, including Boro, there's 24. Again, they're out for bid with Mazingo. The materials are going to take longer. Tyler's investigating also other options, including some additional contractor bids besides Mazingo's, and also looking into the option if we were to buy the parts. So with that said, we don't really know how long all this is going to take. So there's a chance that that these tasks, you know, if we end up getting out into the winter months, these tasks might get delayed until next year. And but we do know that the 45,000 will probably increase, you know, 15 to 20% plus the additional tasks in there. So that amount is definitely going to go up. The final GIS mapping data from MC Engineering, I believe they submitted it. There were issues, Tyler mentioned, with the as-built map. And so their MC Engineering is in the process of fixing those so that we make sure that the data is correct. So we'll have that expense coming in. I believe that expense is pretty accurate. The last item there, purchase of a work truck with plow and a backhoe. There was already, I forget the exact dollar amount, but there it is. The $52,558 was already, it's already included in our expenses in the operating budget. Tyler's checking into other options for the backhoe. And Tyler, I know you were looking at other different types of tractors, I can't remember exactly what you said as far as, I know that you said, you know, there's a possibility that we just may not get one, but I can't remember what your other options were.
Basically, right now, we're leaning forward, it's going to have to be a Kubota or something of that size, newer ones or larger ones, I should say, are unavailable. The ones that we can find are used and not in the state, so we can't actually see them before we purchase it, which is kind of a killer for most of us. We want to be able to see it and check out a piece of equipment before we spend $50,000, $60,000 on it. That would be the used price on a small backhoe, say a John Deere or a Cat one, to go up to 410, something along that size on a John Deere is just too large for what we need. So we were looking for something smaller, and it really just all falls back to those smaller pieces of equipment. And to purchase one is leaning toward like a Coyote or a Kubota or something along those lines. But even at that, spending $60,000 on something that we'll use to repair pipes in the middle of the road and some snow removal is kind of one that I could rent a Relary or one of the guy, local guys around here quite a few times for $60,000. So it's kind of, we're just weighing our, what we're going to be able to use the item for and how often we're going to be able to utilize it over just treatment plant being used lots of years. So it's kind of, it's going to be, the guys are going to take on probably a few more of these projects, but we'll just kind of weigh that on the purchase, because from when I talked to John Deere about it, the PG&E basically bought up every backhoe in our state and every state around us. So there isn't any backhoes, especially the ones of the size that we needed, the 210 or the 110, are unavailable.
And again, just waiting is smart.
Just waiting, yep, and just playing the cards how we have them.
Yeah,
you know, like I said, we could hire out quite a few times for a few thousand dollars to hold us over until we end up buying one.
Absolutely.
For right now, and just the way the market is with cars and everything else, the products aren't there. We're in a long waiting list and possibly not going to get it
right.
All right, if you move on to the next page, there's some more items that are potential liabilities against our reserve budget. And these are the biggies. So item number 7 there, the potential purchase of additional CCWD water. In our discussions on July 1st, Tyler mentioned that, you know, that he feels that there's a fairly high probability, you know, as we get into, you know, this month and, you know, these summer months here, a chance of us exceeding our maximum usage from CCWD of 100,000 gallons per day. So the capacity cost for an additional 100,000 gallons a day would be about $835,000. And through discussions that Tyler has had with them, with Michael Minkler, they will consider a payment plan of up to 3 years, which would amount to $279,000 per year. Allocate all 100,000 gallons a day up front. Some side notes that Tyler had been looking into were estimates of the cost to develop our BORAD well site, you know, so that we can kind of compare that to the cost of getting additional capacity from CCWD. So Tyler estimates that developing the BORAD well site and bringing that online would be over $1 million. So if you weigh that against the 835, and the BORAD well site was only tested at 50 gallons a minute. So anyway, there's your comparison there. He also did some cost estimates of the cost per cubic foot of our well water and CCWD. And I have them written down somewhere, but I know that they came out to be fairly close to each other. So not much difference there. So far our wells have been holding up well and they're doing good. And so any more to add on that one, Tyler?
No, I have to report on some of those things under the reportable board items portion. So
asset management plan funding. This is something that I'm going to be getting back into in more details with the long-range planning committee. In fact, all of these items will be, I want to set up a meeting in the next couple of weeks here with the Long Range Planning Committee and go over all these items in detail. And also on a weekly basis, stay up to speed with Tyler on any new information that he may have. Because all of this is very critical to our long range planning, and trying to make as much of these items fit within our long range plan without overextending ourselves. But there were a few options that we came up with a few months back when we first completed the asset management plan. And it looked like the 40-year plan, laying out that option, was the most favorable from what the other long-range committee members thought. So if you fund the plan for 40 years at 100% replacement costs without factoring in, bringing in any reserve of our reserve sources, meaning any of the 1.3 million, it would amount to $181,000 a year, and at 60% replacement cost, $109,000 a year. If you were to factor in some of the replacement, replacement cost, the existing reserve sources, into the option, 100% would amount to $150,000 a year, and 60% would amount to about $76,000 a year. Our first major replacement is about 9 years out, the main lines in Unit 13 Cypress Point area. So as I mentioned on one of the first pages, the database, the asset management plan database, plan to go over that with Tyler and Billy, and spend a bit of time updating that based on any repairs or replacements that have occurred since that database was developed. And also what I want to do is try to prioritize that database. And what I mean by that is just identify the most critical replacements, down to the nice to haves. So that hopefully we can identify an option that is more feasible within our budget. Because, if you look at costs like this and try to fit that within our operating budget without totally depleting our reserves, it's going to be difficult to do. So I want to dig into that database deeper and, try to identify through Tyler and Billy which are really our most critical items that we really want to plan our option around. During that July 1st meeting, Tyler brought up a couple other concerns that are causing him concern. We're having some major SCADA issues. In Tyler's estimate, he's thinking it's probably a new system would be about $250,000. I look back at the asset management plan just to see what was input into that. And the asset management plan shows it at about $69,000 over the first 10 years. That asset management plan obviously was not taking into account that we would have these major SCADA issues. So that's another item that's come up that will need to be discussed further. Tyler also mentioned the treatment plant filter. I think we don't really know exactly what the cost of that would be. if you do, Tyler, you can speak up. But I look back at the asset management plan. It does not show a treatment plant filter replacement cost until 2057. And why I'm not sure, but I don't think I overlooked anything. I looked every year, and the soonest I saw any replacement cost for the treatment plant filter was out in 2057 at $260,000. So anyway, those are some other items, obviously, that are going to have to be discussed, and as more information becomes available. Any more on that, Tyler?
Yeah, the replacement of the filter is just the sand within it, the media. It has a 10-year lifespan, and it is on 10 years. So we need to replace the sand in it. And 10 years ago, when Mike replaced the sand, he did not replace the baffle at the bottom, which at the time was recommended by the people who were replacing the media. Billy really stresses that that should have been done then. And if it's been 10 more years, I would say it needs to be done now. So the baffle will be a stainless steel baffle on the bottom, and then adding the media to the inside. I don't have the costs on the media just because Dave purchased it 10 years ago. I'm assuming the price for the garments that are in there went up. So that's we haven't gotten a cost estimate, as well as we'll have to hire or rent a vac truck to suck out the media that's within it right now. But that's
right.
It actually won't be a full replacement filter cost. Maybe that's why you have that out so much further, because the vessel itself is in great shape. It's just every 10 years we're supposed to replace the media.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't find that in there in the database at all. So, but yeah, as we develop more information on that, we'll have to bring it forward and work it.
I think Dan had a question.
Okay.
Oh, I had a couple, I'm sorry. On the backup on the CCWD purchasing another 100,000 gallons per day, is there really a need to purchase another 100,000, or is that the minimum we can buy? Would 50,000 be better? I mean, we hardly ever go over our existing 100. And I don't see Blue Lake Springs growing that much to double in water use. So why are we looking at buying another 100,000 gallons?
The board at CCWD won't go any lower than the 100,000 increment, because our numbers show that at a peak time, we're using 170 on a day going through that meter. So they recommend that we don't go lower than the 100,000. They weren't willing to sell us, say, 25 or 50,000 cubic feet. This 100,000 increments is the way Michael said that they would do it. And that is based on the numbers we've given them in the past, which are peak day, usually Labor Day, will go to 170, 180 out of that tank. So to cover that and making sure we're not going over our agreement, that's why we're wanting to purchase it. As of the last 2 months, we have gone over 3 days each month. So they're not raising an eyebrow at it because it was during the holidays. But if somebody wanted to make us think about it, they probably could. So to protect ourselves and protect the agreement, it would probably be best to take that up to the 200, which we will never go over. That's our maximum we're allowed to use a day. We're using more than our minimum, so we're landing somewhere in the middle, and that's where I feel we should be.
And if we bought the extra $100,000 a day, we could use it throughout the whole development too.
Correct. So then it wouldn't just be directed only at well four side. So I could say this past holiday weekend, we could have brought water from 4 to 6 using CCWD water, and not pumped as long on our wells, which would just preserve the life of our wells even more. So purchasing this agreement also protects our wells. So.
Tyler, can I add one thing?
Yeah.
This is Andrew. Recall too, Dan, that the existing agreement with CCWD does not obligate CCWD to sell you incremental capacity. There's a term in there in the agreement that obligates CCWD to sell you a very large amount of capacity that you don't need at this point, if the water company were willing to put up that money. But given that the water company only needs an incremental amount of capacity, if that, we're really in, we're sort of outside the contract at this point, and the topic is up for negotiation. And to Tyler's point, I think the water company has heard from CCWD that they are not willing to sell additional capacity at less than 100,000.
Okay, thank you. And then back on the standstill threat. So, Tyler, are you recommending that we replace the media, and when they get the media out, they'll look at the screens and see if we need new screens? I mean,
or it's a baffle on the bottom. So the baffle is where it's just like a basically a tube, and it has sprayers coming out in different directions. The one that was in there was a PVC one. The new one would be stainless steel. That was, like I say, was recommended last time, and Mike decided to not do it. So that's why they seen that piece at the bottom.
But we have no idea if the sand and this new sparger.
As far as the price?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we don't know what the price is today. I haven't been able to contact the people who we bought the media from last time to even find out if the company is still in existence.
Okay, one last question for Tom. So has the long range planning committee discussed developing guidelines on how we're going to use this reserve money? There should be some guidelines or limitations on how much can be used out of that fund by the general manager, or what items need to go to the board and be approved by the board. I mean, if an emergency came up, or like the sand filter, what is the process?
Yes.
The spending already where I'm only allowed 5,000 and then 10,000 in emergency. So I'm not allowed to go dip into that and start spending a bunch of money without any approval, unless it's an emergency. Even like that, I'm only at 10,000, and then I still have to go seek out Sharon or the treasurer, other board members, or I have to call emergency meetings.
So Dan, I didn't put it in this chart package, but in we've had a list of all these potential liens against our reserves in the packages from prior meetings, and I usually have a comment on the bottom of the page after all these items were listed that for any of the reserve items to move forward, they have to be approved by the long range planning committee, brought to the board, and approved by the board.
Okay. Want to make sure we have some control of it. Thank you.
Yeah. We move on to the next page. Multi-year cash flow analysis, another area that's going to be ongoing. So over the last month or so, I provided the format for the multi-year cash flow analysis to Lee. And I'm not sure who all got involved. If Tyler got involved, I know Dave was still there at the time that I first provided it to Lee. But one of the first things I wanted done was to complete a 2021 forecast comparison to our 2021 budget, just to see now that we're halfway through the year, how we're doing on our expenses, and how that might affect our forecast for this year. If you look at that cash flow analysis, the total income forecast is $49,000 greater than the budget. And that is primarily due to what was brought up when we were looking at that in one of the first pages in our financials. That's primarily due to that one-time CoBank dividend of $55,000 that we received in March. On the expenses side, the forecast is now showing $47,000 less than budget. Even though we have the work truck in there at the $52,558, a large part of that reduced forecast in expenses is primarily driven by the payroll and all the other accounts dealing with payroll, the benefits, insurances, and those type of accounts, which are forecasted about $97,000 less than budgeted. I think just the way, you know, all the changes have occurred in our positions, as far as payroll goes, it's come in a little bit less than was previously forecasted. So the next steps on this would be to work with Tyler and Lee and the staff to populate our forecast for 2022 through 2024. Try to forecast it out for the next 3 years at this point, both income and expenses, based on escalation and any other new information that they may have. And then also continue working with Tyler and the staff on prioritizing and firming up the cost estimates, laying out a timeline for all the identified reserve liens. So you saw that there's several liens there. We need to continue working those, firming up those costs. And then, you know, in all honesty, we have, you know, more liens than we have budget as far as reserves. So we really need to, you know, hone in on prioritizing those and figuring out, you know, which are the most critical and how we're going to try to manage that with, you know, with as little impact to rates and any chance of future assessments as possible. So we'll continue to, the Long Range Committee will continue to review and analyze all the reserve liens and provide our recommendations for deciding the most effective path forward that is both affordable and meets our most critical needs. So that's going to be a process that we're going to be working on a constant basis with Tyler and the whole group there, and then working that back through the Long Range Planning Committee. And as I just mentioned, any agreements that we make, we'll bring forward to the board and get approval there. Next page. We've kind of already touched on this. The asset management plan, it's a very large database. There's a couple different formats in there. So I'll work with Tyler and Billy on the best format to use so that we'll be able to go in there and look at all the line items in there and in a format that's easy for them to see which of those may have changed over the last several months. Update the database based on any of those changes, and then make those revisions. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, I also really want to try to identify the prioritization of assets within that database, so we can really see which ones are the most critical and really focus in on those. And make sure that those fit into the option that we choose for funding the asset management plan out in the future. And the last bullet just reiterates what I have already said. Any questions on that one? The last item that will be ongoing as we continue forward through this year. This chart was shown in the annual meeting. I just wanted to include it in the package again. It shows the water usage based on our meter readings, January through December for the last 3 years leading up to 2021. So for 2018, 19, and 20. So the takeaways from that as I mentioned during the annual meeting, was the overall average cubic foot amount has been decreasing each year. You can see the far right column in each of the tables. It's gone from average of 288 down to 251 over those 3 years. The percentage using less than our allotment of 350 cubic feet a month, and the average cubic feet usage per month in that tier has been nearly the same for all 3 years. If you look, 77% for a 98 cubic foot average, 79 for 96 average, and then 79 for 97 average. So a large majority of our residents, you know, close to 80% of our residents are using in the 96 to 98 cubic foot range per month. And if you look on the tiers above the 350, if you add those tiers up, about 20% of the residents are using more than the 350 cubic foot allotment, but and consuming about 70% of the water. So as we move forward, this type of information will be discussed with the Long Range Planning Committee and taken into account as we move forward in deciding if we want to make any metered usage rate structure changes to our overall rate structure.
Next page. Yes. Just a quick question. The ones greater than 1400, is there like something they're doing that's different than everybody else? I mean, you know, our HOA is pretty much a residential. I mean, I know there's some vacation renters, but it seems like a lot compared to, I mean, there's two people in my house, and we come in right around, you know, the monthly app. We paid like $1 extra the last 2 months. So,
right.
So there's got to be something with the usage of the water that's different.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, and I haven't looked at it over the last 6 months or so, but the real heavy users have large lots with a lot of plants and trees, with drip systems or sprinklers going to almost every plant and tree on their property.
Okay. It's probably true.
So the next page, just a quick synopsis of this. A few weeks ago, Sharon gave me updates through May of this year. So what I did is I just compared January through May 2020 to 2021. And it was a little bit surprising, a couple of the things that I see in this chart. So anyway, at the bottom, it shows average sample size increased from last year for 1,163 up to an average sample size of 1,593. So you can see we're getting closer to the total number in our samples, to the total number of residents. The average through May in 2020 was 173 cubic feet. And the average through May of this year was 214 cubic feet. So it's actually showing that our average has gone up in this first 5 months. And you can see on the far right there, I put in the increase in the lowest tier, the less than 350, which is our allotment. You can see how much the average cubic feet in that tier increased from last year to this year. So at the bottom, I just put, note the increase there. And, you know, is that somehow related to the COVID, you know, pandemic? Because it looks like that lowest tier has a lot to do with our total average going up. So our total average increased by 24% from January through May of this year. So anyway, that'll be something else that, you know, I'll just be discussing with the Long Range Planning Committee. And the next page just gives a little...
Tom,
pardon me?
Yes. This is Dan again. I looked at the daily usages in the water section, and it actually looked like in 2021 we were using less water per day. Did I misread something? Or Tyler, maybe you can speak to it.
Yeah, last month we used 18% less water than we used in June 2020.
That's, yeah. So you can see May did go down.
Yeah, I see May.
Yeah. But I don't know. This is just based on the meter data readings that are given to me. Yeah, I don't know why the data would show something differently than unless the other couple hundred or 150 residents that aren't in this average were really, really low. I don't know.
Well, it seems like we need more like a 5 or 6 year trend, don't we? To really know what's going on. Right. Cause I remember some tables that it's like, I was looking at how much we used and it looked to me like we still weren't higher than we were. Like it was like 7 or 8 years ago, we peaked and it went down and now we're going back up, but we still weren't over the record high for water usage.
Right.
But so I find it interesting. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out, whether or not it's going to be tied more to economic activity is my theory, but
right. I
mean, COVID's going to be a blimp in the over 10 years. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the other thing to realize is in 2020, we had 300 or 400 less meters. So,
yes. So Tom's numbers actually up until about April there, everybody had a meter, but wasn't hooked up to it. So until in the past recent months, you really haven't been getting everybody that's hooked to that and metered from that. We had people definitely dragging their feet on being hooked up to a meter because they weren't hooked to a meter on the other side. So they're thinking they were getting free water. And most of them, as you can see in Tom's charts, don't use enough to where we're billing out. It's the flat rate for most people. But coming up in the next year, we should have a much better grasp on what people are using because everybody is metered now. Beforehand, it's always less. You know, as you can see, it's 1,400 last year, and then as of this year, it's 17, 16.
So what month were we fully metered then?
Them all installed about mid-January, as far as everybody hooking to them, sometime in April. We still have, I would have to ask Billy, but we might have installed one guy, Del Rio, that hasn't
moved
up the far last line that people are looking at.
One additional thing that might significantly skew the statistics is the number of new full-time residents we're getting and the number of increase in Airbnbs in England, which are at this time of year fully rental around the corner from anyone occupies 20 people.
Yeah. Our biggest users are definitely the same handful of people, 6 or 7 people. Like Tom said, there are usually people that have house on multiple lots and everything is irrigated. Everything's irrigated and they're just, you know, we're always gonna have those people that aren't gonna wanna conserve and feel that they're hardly ever here. When they're here, they're gonna use as much as they want. And unfortunately, that's our 2%, 1% of that.
And at the same time, the media messages that are coming out, and everything that's coming out about drought and cutting back voluntarily, that kind of stuff, that's got some impact on it.
Yeah.
And my personal experience has been those big users are pretty efficient in the way they do it. You know, they've got the most high-tech systems and.
Yeah, they usually have pretty heavy high-tech systems, but I mean, I have just one customer I know he uses over 10,000 cubic feet every month. just to water his property that he doesn't live on. He's a non-full-time person. So, I mean, it's the same people over and over that use the most amount of water. I think that Tom's numbers here, what it really shows is the conservation message is getting out to the people. You have 86% of the people don't even use their allotment. And according to CCWD yesterday, they came out with the state is recommending we cut back by 15% voluntarily.
Right.
They're going to compare it to the 2020 year. And so for us, as of last month, we saved 18%. We're above what the state's asking us to do before they ever even asked us. So I say our community is definitely listening. There's just those few that don't want to listen, or they might not listen even when it comes to mandatory restrictions.
So when you do the long range planning, Tom, I guess you look at the numbers, you throw out the very high users when you're looking for water demand, because it seems like that would consistently kind of skew the data a little bit, right? If you have these 2% yeah. that are
ones that are really super high, I've been throwing out. Yeah.
Okay. Cause I think I'm more interested in the average person, the normal user, if that's going right. up or down. Yeah.
Right.
Cause yeah. I don't think I agree with you guys that if they're allowed to use the water and they pay for it, they're going to keep doing it. So, because they have the money to do it. So,
exactly. Yeah, I've actually talked to one of our biggest users. I know the guy, and he doesn't care. You know, he really doesn't have any concern for how much water he's using. And I go, well, you know, we're probably going to be changing our rate structure a little bit, so you're going to be paying a little more. And he goes, I don't care. So there's those few that are like that, and he's one of the biggest users. So the next page, as we move forward, there'll be a lot of discussion on this, and as to how we might consider making some changes going forward. But so the top bullet just states the obvious that we already looked at. For the past 3 years, approximately 80% of the readings are less than our allotment of 350 cubic feet a month, averaging about 97 cubic feet a month for that tier. The total three-year average for all tiers combined is about 268 cubic feet a month. And the total for this year, January through May, is 214 cubic feet a month. And the total cubic foot usage per month has pretty much been decreasing each year based on all the conservation efforts that have occurred. So with our base usage allotment at 350, we're going to continue to collect usage data throughout the remainder of this year. We'll discuss with the long range committee if an adjustment to the base usage allotment is in order. And we'll develop examples of the additional income that can be generated from various lower base usage allotment levels. So instead of 350, you know, if you look at the averages that we're seeing, you know, maybe something less than 350, 300 or something around there, might make more sense. So what we can do is I can develop, based on all the data, I can develop what changing it to 350 or 300 as the base allotment would do to our income as far as increasing income. The other area to look at is our rate, the metered usage rate. Pardon?
So, I mean, why would we lower the 350 and penalize the people that are low users? Why not increase the higher ones, the heavy users that are using a lot of water? I just don't understand why we would drop the 350, because especially for part-timers like myself, some months I get close to 350 and some months I have none, but if we're going to look at raising rates, I would think we would want to tax the
more than 728 gallons of water for $1.60. That's where the issue is.
Yeah, it's just two different areas that I wanted to dig in a little more detail to see what it tells us. But yeah, the next bullet talks about the metered usage rate. That has never changed. I mean, ever since I've been on the board, it's been $1.60. Well, ever since we started tracking meters, $1.60 per 100 cubic feet for any usage above the base allotment. It's all one rate, no increase for higher usage tiers.
They're tiered in every major urban water district in California. And the people that are using 1,400 units ought to be paying triple, ought to be paying $6 a unit.
I don't disagree. We're going to be discussing this metered usage rate with the Long Range Planning Committee more now that we've got all the meters in, develop examples of the type of income that can be generated from adjusting that meter usage rate. So the note there that I mentioned is up to this point, the shareholder base rates have been forced to cover much of a much greater percentage of our total expenditures due to the lack of metered usage data. So now that we have the meter usage data, and prior, you know, making adjustments to the rate, you know, say when we only had half the people on meters, you know, if we jack the rate up for those on meters, there might be a whole bunch of people that are using even, you know, real great amounts of water, but we don't know it because they weren't on meters. So now that we do have everybody on meters, I think it's really critical for us to look into the usage rate. And, you know, one other little quick analysis that I did this morning was I looked at our metered income. And, you know, we budgeted $35,000 for metered income this year. And we're actually, our income that has come in is trailing behind that budget. But $35,000, if you took the USDA loan amount out of our income, and just, you know, just added up the rest of our income without the USDA in there, $35,000 is only 2.9% of our total income budget. So the metered usage, those using the water and the amount of water that they use, I think this is a pretty telltale sign that more emphasis needs to be put on that metered usage rate. If we're only collecting 2.9% of our income from meters, something needs to change.
Tom, is it okay if I jump in here for a second?
Sure.
And at the risk of repeating what you're already saying, what Tom is describing is something that he and the Long Range Planning Commission have been really all over the last couple of years. And this has been an issue that the water company has been working towards. As soon as you're in a fully or almost fully metered system. So, you know, at the risk of saying what Tom has just said, but emphasizing it, you know, there's some decisions to be made about rates and the rate structure, but those decisions have been held up. You've known they were coming, but those decisions have been held up by the lack of metering. Now that metering is here, you've got some important decisions to make, but you actually have the data to support those decisions. And that's been a really important thing. But again, it's been on the LRPC's radar for a long time.
Right. So I think, you know, the data is telling us that there's definitely a need to revisit our rate structure and make some changes there. And, you know, I've mentioned even in our annual meetings to the shareholders that this will be coming, and people that are using more water will be paying more of their fair share for that water. Any other questions and comments on this? This will definitely be a topic that's going to be discussed in detail with the Long Range Planning Committee and with Tyler and his staff as we go forward here, leading up to the end of the year when we're actually going to incorporate a rate structure that will deal with this.
So can we do a survey of our shareholders? Like when we send the billing statement out by mail, can we put in there just to get a public opinion polls of how many? I mean, I know 80%, say if we say we have a two-tiered system, we want to move to a three or four-tiered system, but keep the rate the same at 350. I mean, I think 80% of the people would say, yeah, that's fine with me, right?
Yep, I'm sure right. They would.
So you have, I mean, I think the other is the drought considerations. And then if we're really going to have to buy another 100,000 gallons per day from the county, you know, we are, that is an occurred, you know, it's a new cost, right?
Right.
Right. So it's, yeah. There's some justification here. So it's not.
Yeah, just I'll just briefly touch on the fact, and Andrew can chime in because he's probably a lot more in tune with the legalities and what other water companies have dealt with. But we need to make sure that we whatever rate structure we come up with is straightforward, can be explained, and is fair and reasonable, and is based on the cost of the water. When you go into multi-tiered rate structures, where say you have three or four different tiers, and you charge a different amount in each of those tiers, it's harder to justify the dollar amounts that you're charging in each of those tiers if you get challenged on it. Andrew, do you want to comment on that?
Tom, I agree with everything you just said. It's sort of a balancing act that you have to play. The water company, again, is a private water company. It is not a public agency subject to Proposition 218. So you have more freedom to set rates in a way that, you know, is at the board's discretion. But with that said, I agree with what Tom said. There are guidelines that you have to follow. Number one being that you have to serve water at cost. So as soon as you start to look at some of these higher punitive tiers, we are getting farther away from the idea of serving water at cost, which is not to say it can't be done, but it just takes more work to justify to your shareholders. But one of the issues I'd highlight, though, is this discussion about changing the base allotment. Keep in mind, and I think Tom covered this, but it's worth reemphasizing, if you look at changing the base allotment and shifting it down, you are likely to more accurately track how the majority of your users are using water. And thus, by shifting more of your high tier and high usage, high volume users away from that base allotment and into a metered rate, you're sort of accomplishing that same thing by charging them more at the meter rate rather than charging everybody for the base allotment. You are shifting costs away from the majority of your users and shifting them to your high users. So you may be able to accomplish the exact same thing without having to think about punitive higher tiers. But that's something that's, I think, on Tom's radar, because we've been talking about it in the past. It's on the LRPC's radar. So it's really something that you're going to have to look at in the long term and see if it's something that's acceptable to the board and to your shareholders.
No, I appreciate your comments, Andrew, insight. I was thinking more, you know, with the rate structure based more on environmental concerns and conservation of water as a justification. So I, I mean, we do have well water. I mean, we just had an earthquake. We don't know whether that affected the wells. There are records where earthquakes shift, you know, underground water reservoirs. So I don't know if it impacted us. It definitely shook my house. So I think from an environmental concern and just there's, you can also have a practical matter where, you know, you just don't have enough water to have users going overboard. So anyway, there's a lot of ways to look at it. So, but I agree with your point about the cost of water. You want to just, it's not a good idea to charge more than the cost. So.
Any other comments or questions on the water rates? I think that was the end of my pitch.
Thank you very much, Tom. It was really all your hard work on this matter. I'd like to call a 5-minute recess. So I have 10:32, so we'll reconvene at 10:37. Is that okay? All right.
That's just something to do now.
It works.
Where are you going to roll a golf ball?
So what?
Where are you going to roll a golf ball?
A lot of it came from the engineering from the project. They gave
all the shot was really
time on what's left on the pipe.
Did you say you're in Northern California today? Or you're on mute? You're muted, Tom. Can't hear you.
You probably didn't hear me. I guess I was muted. Yeah, we came up a couple of weeks ago to Arnold, and we drove up to Roseville this weekend to visit my in-laws.
Okay. So you're getting the same weather I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I went jogging about 8 o'clock this morning. It was already pretty hot out there.
Yeah. We have a whole house fan that we run, and usually we get to run it until about 10 a.m. and we stopped it at 7 a.m. today because it was already hotter outside. No, thank you.
Yeah, when we drove up here yesterday from Arnold, there were a couple places on the freeway where my car was saying 114 degrees.
Ooh. Oh, man.
I know a lot of that's the heat of the asphalt, but, you know, that was beginning to sound like Arizona.
Yeah. Everything is, it's amazing just how dry everything is in the area. I don't know what things are like up at Arnold, but around here, as you're seeing, just looking at the median, I mean, yeah, it's July now, but it's looked, you know, yellow and crispy for months now. It's awful.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Arizona's got a pretty unique water system. You know, everyone just views it as this really dry state.
Yeah.
You know, one, they have a lot more mountains than people realize, you know, with snow and high elevations and a lot of lakes. There's probably 10 lakes within an hour to an hour and a half of our house down there.
Yeah.
And they've got, you know, I think it's the Salt River. Many years ago, they built these, I'm not sure exactly what the technology is, but bladders in the, below the river where they can inflate and deflate these bladders that let the water go down into aquifers. And, so I read something online recently that they finally, you know, did something where they're drawing that water back up. And it, I think they said that it was the amount of water that they had stored was like 70 times the size of one of their lakes. So anyway, a pretty unique water system that they designed and built, I guess, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that.
That's an investment that we certainly have not made and needed to make along the way and are playing catch up on now if we ever even get there.
Yeah.
Andrew, is there a way to unmute everybody? I muted them for a sec because we were recording and I don't know how to.
I think there is. I think you can click on their name or to the right of their name. And I think you're able to do that. You There's can click a more box.
Right. It says ask to unmute. It doesn't actually let me unmute them though.
Are you able to make me a co-host?
Yes.
Figure it out.
Let me figure out how to do that. Okay. Nate, co-host, here you go. All right. Do you want? Yes, I do. Okay.
You want me to unmute the room?
Sure, please.
See if I can do it.
think the only one not unmuted is our computer in the conference room.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't.
No, I'm going to go in there real quick. I'll be right back.
There we go.
All right. Welcome back. We actually want to try to bring out the financials for April 2021. And it had to do with the, we looked at the Edward Jones Reserve Bond. And it looks like what was reported for the June was transposed. So the in our packet, what's reported as the savings is really the bond, and the bond is the savings. So the savings went down, the bond did not go down. So we will follow up and clarify that really is what happened. And I think we can send out a new balance sheet, correct information.
I believe we are at correspondence. Sheens,
yes.
Which would be Captain.
Is there any correspondence, Kathy?
No, not this time.
Okay. How about the next item?
Yes. So we just billed out at the end of June about $263,700 and some odd dollars. The metered water that we billed was $6,451. People are paying. The delinquent letters that I've been sending out and the 30-day notices are working very well. So I know the unpaid balance is high, but most of those, we have 18 liens on file right now. So that balance is the over 120-day people are mostly liened at this point.
We don't have any water shutoffs because we can't do that.
No, we can't. Yeah.
Right. Our next item? The reportable items?
The reportable items that goes to me. So on the, I don't know if everybody has the reportable item list. Kathy, can you
speak? Sorry, yes, just a sec.
No problem.
Page 30. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
So first of all, the reportable items goes back to the blending water. We had talked about this a few other times, even while Dave was still here. Since then, we did our own in-house studies on the blending of the two waters. We tested for our daily testing that we normally do, the chlorine, the pH, the alkalinity, the calcium, and the Langmuir index. Anything beyond that, the state requires us to do, so we do that as needed every month to do more extensive testing. But anyway, our water comes out to about a part of chlorine, you know, 7.4 on the pH. The calcium and the alkalinity are a little high, which once we treat our water, it's pretty good actually. Calcium hardness gets down, alkalinity goes down a little bit. Might be why over the years you guys have seen white staining per se on your faucets. We lowered that, so now our Langmuir index is neutral. Instead of making calcium, we're neutral. We're not acidic, we're not eating away at pipes, but we're also not adding calcium to the pipes. Dave's past practices were he'd rather stay toward the calcium side than the neutral side, but we need daily testing on it, so it's pretty easy to stay neutral and not get to the aggressive side. DCWD's water is comprised of pretty much the same as ours. The chlorine is about a part, the pH is a hair lower at 7.2. Their alkalinity and calcium is almost non-existent, being that they're a surface water. They don't have much minerals in the rivers that's coming down compared to us. So their Langmuir index is a little more aggressive than ours. It's about a -1, where 0 is neutral. When we combine our waters, the Langmuir index from their water to our water, it neutralizes. So even at a small percentage of our water to 75% of our water in the tank and only 25% of theirs, it neutralizes the Langmuir index. So that's our most important one, we feel. because that's the one that will eat away at lead and copper in people's homes. So that stays neutral as we use it. The chlorine stays at one part, the pH stays at 7.4, and adding their real low alkalinity and low calcium hardness to ours, it brings it down even better. So in really clean waters, there doesn't seem to be an issue on the chemical compounds. Aesthetically and taste is great. So I personally don't see any problems with blending our waters. It was a concern of Dave's, obviously, because there can be some byproducts made. We have checked back to the state and everything's looking good.
Excuse me, whoever is on Zoom, can you guys mute yourselves? So we're getting some feedback. Thank you.
Going to the second reportable board item is the well of ORAD, putting together the cost to put it online. Like Tom said earlier, it's going to be well over $1 million. We have engineering at 100, and these are figures, of course, that were done about when I first got here, so about 8 years old. I would imagine these figures, just like Mazingo is telling me, are going to go up about 15-20%.
Hey, Tyler, I'm really having a hard time hearing you because there's several other conversations going on with somebody. So if people could put it on mute. I mean, I don't want to be a stick in the mud, but if you're not talking.
Okay, so going down, the next item was the BORAD cost. Engineering came out to $130,000. The pipeline at 3,000 feet came out to $225,000. Materials was $400,000. Two removable buildings, similar to what we put in at Lucia Well, was about $400,000. Security cameras is $38,000. And then we're still looking at unknown costs of, say, the fencing, the gate, the SCADA system, the pre-project pump and water testing costs, construction management, geotech, the county, easement, and spoils. So with those unknown costs and what I had already figured, we are well over $1 million to put ORAD online. Tom put in his notes, when it was tested at a 50-gallon a minute well. For 50 gallons a minute, that puts us at half of what Lucia does and will cost more. So really it is a source that we can use, but as far as a viable source compared to purchasing that 100,000 increment we're talking about, the 100,000 from CCWD is a better purchase right now. We have done searches throughout Arnold for water, and these are our two. This is it. There isn't another place to drill for water, or that is a feasible spot to send pipeline down the highway into Blue Woods. As of now, and I believe most things were checked. There was every portion.
Several million dollars, I think, for water in the 2013.
Yeah, 12, right 13, on the
14, yeah. And you know, we found the Lucia site where we have an easement and we have our well there, and we purchased the property at ORAD, and that was it. And in some cases, we drilled 10,000 feet and found nothing.
And found nothing, yeah. So, or less than 20 gallons a minute.
Yeah.
Very small wells that we could find. So as far as supporting our larger system, these are our two. I do think, let's not throw ORAD out the window by any means, but as far as putting stuff in a timeline manner, the CCWD agreement should come first, then we can go back to looking at developing the web. Going on from there, it's the additional projects for, want to get a better cost. There is the list that is in the packet. Those are all the projects that still need to be completed, most of which are disconnecting the old main from the new. Right now, we would have a valve keeping them separated, and the old main, of course, is drained or has old stale water in it. If the valve developed a leak and something bad happened on our side, we could suck that dirty water into our system. So most of these projects are disconnecting and capping our new pipe from the old pipe. There are, of course, the Boro core and adding a couple services, I believe the first three of them are adding a service. Those are people that did not receive services during the project. One, because they were either too extensive, or I would have to say the Spring Valley one, just because it's so extensive, it's going through rock to tap from one side of the road to the other and give them a box. That was going to be quite a large cost, and I know that just kind of kept putting further and further on the back burner during the project. So now it's into these extras. Brad is from Mazingo, is working on the cost for me. He, like Tom said earlier, he said it can be 3 months just to get the parts once he lets me know what the prices of them are. It's very limited on supplies out there right now. Moving forward, the additional wholesale water, we've talked about that quite a bit. The further research of the CCWD agreement, as well as Tom said, I met with Michael and they would accept the three payments over 3 years instead of a one lump sum. So we would come out to approximately $279,000 a year for another $100,000 per day. So that would take us up to $200,000 per day that we're allotted. And yes, it would ease up on our wells, not just focusing on feeding the tank four side. We could feed both sides with that water and blend it, as we just talked about. So the price, July 1st, I believe, was when CCWD meets and they talk about their rate increases. Michael did say that the price will go up a small amount, not a large amount, but it will go up on July 1st. He didn't have the numbers for me when we talked because they hadn't had a meeting. But they will raise the connection fees as they have every year. Going after the research in CCWD, cost of well water. So it was asked to research the cost of our well water toward the cost of what we pay CCWD for water. I didn't get it into the packet. I gave you guys a copy of a little handout here of the cost to make the well water. Taking on power, our chemicals, and the testing, the SCADA, sludge removal, and the state fees, basically everything it would take to get you some clean water, not including, I mean, the fees of the guys working and all that, and the piping in the ground, that goes into the base rate. So as far as it costs us to make water, I came out to what we're charging, $1.60 per 100 cubic feet, 1.597. So when you round that up, it's $1.60 per 100 cubic feet. As of now, we pay CCWD on average $1.81 per 100 cubic feet that goes through the tank foresight. So that our cost to buy water and our cost to make water are very comparable. And I think the buying the water is always just fine too, to some extent, because it does preserve our wells that we have. Going down the LRPC cash flow budget worksheet, that was Tom, unless we need to meet and we'll take care of the in that in LRPC. The last one on there was under the rules and regulations, I believe it was Director Rich wanted us to research the word amortization that we were using in the rules and regs. Reason we were putting it in the rules and regs was because it came from SB 998. Just the basic meaning of it was to give people a payment, give them a way to make their payments for the people who can't pay. We aren't decreasing the allot, what they owe, any of that sort. As far as amortization, we are only setting up a schedule of payments so they can pay off what they owe. That was the reasoning of the word. I mean, mainly because it was put in there from the legislatures and it wasn't going to change part of the bill that they put forth. So that takes care of all the reportable items, I believe.
Tyler?
Yes.
So did you say in the packet there is a breakdown on the cost of making our own water? I don't see that in the packet.
Before it went out, I only have a copy of it here. I can email it to you after the meeting.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay. Yeah, I'll email this
one. And just a point of order, this reportable items list, either we should take some of these items off or we should change the name from Hicks to Tyler.
Yes. Yeah, we'll get rid of Hicks on there. And I believe unless any of these have further, we will only be down to the LRPC cash flow budget worksheet. This should take care of all the reportable board items. Yep. And then the additional projects, that isn't finished either. So I'll have to do more on that.
Okay, thank you.
The next item is the internet phone system.
So the office here, since they bought the building, has had internet and phone issues. I've only been here a few months now, but daily we have the internet go out. Our phones are not analog. They are on the internet. So then we have our phones go out. People aren't able to call us. We're not able to call out until we can reset the box and it comes back. We had Comcast come in to try to fix the situation. He couldn't even touch what was back there in his back room. He said it was so big of a rat's nest. We needed to hire, a telecom contractor, somebody that knew more about it that would put it together. We went out and tried to get a couple bids. The other person that came in and checked on it, he never gave us back a bid. So I guess he pulled his hat from wanting to do it. We have the one bid here. I believe if she goes down, or it is in your packet, the project proposal from Mark Honer. The total is $4,446 to come in and put in the new networking equipment. I'm not a technical guru to be able to tell you exactly what he's putting in and doing, but he's cleaning up everything in the back to where we should no longer have phone issues. And then possibly he recommended that we go back to an analog phone, which the phone lines need to be fixed, because he was saying up here in Arnold, we don't have fiber optics in the ground yet, that the phone lines are gonna continue to have issues if we stay on the internet-based phone. It works great, he says, in the valley, but just not in the mountain areas. It does not work so good until they come in and AT&T puts in the fiber optics. It's actually right out here in front of our office, the box. So until they bring it there, we're kind of stuck going back to analog. Hopefully that would be one of the first places they come to, because it's right from the firehouse. So I think overall, if anybody's gonna get fiber optics, it's gonna be them, which at that point we can go that route. But this is what he recommended for us to go back. He was recommended through Tim Murity, recommended him. He had done work for him in the past and did a great job. So this is the proposal he put forth. And so we're looking to see if the board will approve the $4,446 for us to go forward with hiring Mark to fix our internet and phones.
So just because I'm a layman, so the telephone will be on a hard line or would still be on the internet?
He's recommending we go to a hard line.
Okay, so that's good. So was it cheaper just to throw away the existing system and put in a new one, or
that's what we tried to do? But when Comcast came in, they said they can't touch what's going on back there because there's too many other issues. Mainly he was talking of wire sticking out and just cut, and they're still connected to the wall. He says they're acting like antennas and they will arc over, and that's where probably a lot of our problems are coming from. So it's just the abandonment of the old system from when it was a bank into ours, and somebody just went in there and started cutting wires. He said that all needs to be pulled out and redone. Yes, to go to your question, he wants us to go back to a hardline phone and no longer have the internet phones.
So are there any ongoing costs beyond what's showing here, like monthly costs in after the installation?
I don't believe the only cost that he had on here was additional troubleshooting for $150 an hour, the $600. And that, I believe on the back page, where is that spot? There was a spot that it said that he may use it if needed. I don't believe on-site installation is a fixed bid up to 10 hours, one full day, additional time. Yeah, I believe there was a spot he was going to offer us basically support as we needed it. But yes, if he does this, it's supposed to be ready to go. We shouldn't have to hire anybody else. We do have Comcast and AT&T. We use Comcast most of the time, but since Comcast, when PSPSs happen and you have to go to your generator, it goes out, our internet switches over to our AT&T internet. AT&T didn't offer fast enough internet for the business here to where it was basically doing the same thing it's doing now. It's kicking us off all the time because there's too many people on.
Phase three is the as-needed basis.
Yeah,
for my support.
I knew I heard.
And he's budgeted $600 for that.
He as well has told us it's going to take 4 to 8 weeks because of items being hard to get.
So I think Tom might have been asking, like, what's the monthly rate that we pay Comcast and AT&T? Has any of that changed? Or
I would have to get that those figures from me. I believe that phones would change and be cheaper would be my thought, because right now we're off of internet-based phones. And so if we went to the cost of the phones, going through like AT&T on a phone line might be cheaper than what we have to buy on a business Comcast, I'm not sure. Right. I don't know what our plans are within Comcast and AT&T to tell you that.
Right, but we can look into that.
Yeah. I'll look into that and get that from you.
And maybe we can find out how much our rate will be once we go to analog phones.
Yeah.
So. So I think we need.
So, yeah, some action to.
We need a motion, yeah.
Are you looking for a motion to approve?
Yes.
I'll make a motion to approve to enter into a contract with Homer Technical Services for upgrading the communication system.
Second.
Thank you very much.
Can we vote on it?
Yeah, let's vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any name? All not in favor? Right, motion carries. Okay, we have one more item for adding Bill Clover as a spider for the banks.
You check his record.
I'm hoping we did a background check, right? So, I'm assuming it's pristine. So you have a motion, a resolution before you in your packet to add Bill Clover. This is our treasurer, but we need a second signer.
Yes, we need a second signer at the banks. When I went over and was exchanging my name with Dave's, the other person on their signing is no longer a board member. So by removing him and Dave, there's only me at all the banks to sign for stuff. All the banks were recommending we have at least a second signer in case something happened to me. So that's where we need to have Bill. We felt was probably the best one, meaning he's taking over as the treasurer. And the list of banks we have somewhere, there's, I think, about 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah.
Bank of America, Bank Stockton, El Dorado, Merchants, and Edward Jones.
Yes.
Yeah, she's
going to
call on the resolution.
Okay,
so.
A motion that we accept resolution 2021-7-10 as written.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I didn't hear Bill.
Aye. Aye, 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 aye.
And any against the motion? All right, the motion carries. Thank you.
You can vote no and it still passes.
I know, right? I just thought I'd give them the option. So. I don't believe do we have any items for executive session? So I think we need a motion to adjourn.
Yeah. All
right. Who wants to do that?
Jeff, you haven't done any making motions.
I will make a motion to adjourn.
All right.
I'll second.
3 seconds. Okay, great.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Good meeting. Bye. Thank you.
Stay cool.
Thank you.